On today's episode, Lara and I are diving into the world of skunks. If you've ever wondered about this stinky little critter, you have come to the right place.
Welcome to Naturally Florida, a podcast about Florida's natural areas and the wild things that live here. I'm Lara Milligan.
And I'm Shannon Carnevale.
This podcast is brought to you by UF IFAS Extension in Polk and Pinellas counties.
I was talking with Shannon off air about this episode. We're talking all about skunks. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people think about skunks when they think about wildlife in Florida. But I was asking Shannon, I said, you know, we both grew up on the East Coast. And do you remember smelling skunk? Like when we went on road trips on 95, I was constantly driving back and forth to Miami for soccer.
Yeah, that was such an interesting question from you, Lara. I don't remember that at all. And when we were talking about skunks, like, I don't remember ever seeing a skunk in South Florida growing up. That doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Right.
It just means I don't remember it. It wasn't a particularly memorable experience for me. I mean, there were all kinds of smells on the highway. You still get those. You still get those driving up and down Southeast Florida. I think in my head, though, I've just always assumed it was the landfill, one of them.
Right.
Maybe if I smelled a skunk in the car, I just didn't know that's what the smell was.
Right.
Who knows?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. We did pass many landfills as well. And we're going to talk more about the stench that's associated with skunks a little bit later on.
Yeah, and that'll be a fun discussion. But why don't we start with what skunks are even in Florida and where are they?
Yeah, that's a good question because, people might not even know that we have skunks, but we actually have two separate species of skunks. We have the striped skunk and the eastern spotted skunk. And if you want to get a little technical, there's actually two subspecies of the eastern spotted skunk, the Florida spotted skunk and the Appalachian spotted skunk, which we, for the purposes of this episode, will just be referring them together as the eastern spotted skunk.
Because they look the same and they're both found in Florida, just different parts of Florida, right?
Yeah. And there's honestly like still research going on, and which will come out in our call to action about this. But generally, the Florida spotted skunk is only found in peninsular Florida. And then the Appalachian spotted skunk is more northwest Florida up into like the panhandle area. But there's more research needed for this, which again, we will get to in the call to action.
Yeah, I think it's great that there's so much more skunk research going on because I think they're such a cute little fascinating critter. But an example of where skunk research has changed how we understand them a little bit, they used to be considered part of the weasel family, which is the Mystelidae family. But now, because they're so cool and so unique, they are actually in their own taxonomic family now, the Mephitidae, which mephitis is Latin for bad odor. So it really plays into this whole like stinky skunk reputation they got going on.
Yes, that's a very appropriate move, I feel like. So we want to just briefly talk a little bit more about the difference between the two species that we mentioned. So we're going to start by talking about the striped skunk. They're a little bit more, I guess, common. Shannon was telling me, you know, we were talking again offline just about cartoons, and it's pretty much always a striped skunk that's featured in a cartoon. So they're just, I guess, what people think about.
For sure. And if anyone remembers Pepe Le Pew, the Looney Tune, he was a striped skunk. And so anytime you think of like a skunk, this is the skunk you're thinking about.
Yeah. So the name kind of gives it away. So this skunk usually has two broad stripes, white stripes, that run the full length of its body and it goes into the tail. The color can kind of vary. Sometimes they almost look more white than black. But generally speaking, they have, compared to their body, a small head, short legs, and this giant bushy tail, which are just hilarious. And in terms of their face, this is kind of a key difference between the two. So with the striped skunk, they have a white stripe down the center of their face. And in terms of their size, so the striped skunk is larger than our eastern spotted skunk. So not including the tail, they're 13 to 18 inches. But when you include this crazy tail, we're talking up to 31 inches.
Yeah. So, you know, about the same size as your average house cat, I would say.
Yeah, I think you could say that. Just, you know, not as high off the ground and smaller head. But yeah, otherwise, similar size. And the striped skunk is found throughout Florida, with the exception of the Florida Keys. I feel like we say that so often. And
yeah,
in terms of where they live, they're pretty flexible. So they'll occupy both residential and natural areas. In terms of natural areas, they like a mix of dense vegetation and open areas. There's also some research that suggests they like areas with large dead trees as well, which will come back when we talk about their dens later on. And then the other species is the eastern spotted skunk. And I'm going to let Shannon talk a little bit about how this one differs from the striped skunk.
If it's possible, the eastern spotted skunk is even cuter than the striped skunk.
They're cute.
They are mainly black, but they do have a series of broken white stripes that start behind their eye and continue all the way down the side of their body. These broken stripes give them an appearance of having spots or splotches, leading to their name, the eastern spotted skunk. They also have a white, pointed triangle-type shape on their forehead that points down, and their tail is predominantly black, but does have some white coloration underneath and at the very tip of the tail. Generally speaking, the eastern spotted skunk is smaller than the striped skunk, with a body length of only 11 to 12 inches and a total, including the tail, of just under 2 feet. Like the striped skunk, the eastern spotted skunk is found primarily throughout Florida, with exception to the Florida Keys. And it's also not found in extreme northeast Florida. So if you think Duval County area, they do not have the eastern spotted skunk. They also prefer residential and natural areas, just like the striped skunk, but they will prefer in natural areas a slightly more denser scrub cover. They like drier habitats in general.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, I was telling Shannon, the first skunk I ever saw was at the beach, and which is just bizarre. It's weird. It's kind of like seeing a gopher tortoise at the beach too. It's just weird, but it's one of their habitats. So same with the skunk. They will also occupy dunes and coastal scrub habitats. And super cool, in Florida, we have an ecosystem that's endemic, only found here in Florida, which is the dry prairie. So they have a preference for that as well. Key thing here, I think you're sensing, is dry, mm-hmm. dry habitat.
They've also been noted to be really abundant on ag lands. So this is just another example of one of our Florida species that does really well in areas that have been converted over to agriculture, such as pasture. And y'all know that Lara and I don't really like putting population numbers because they can be really hard to study. But there was a study done from February 2016 to November 2018 that documented as many as 218 unique individuals just in the Three Lakes Wildlife Management Area, which, if you're not familiar with, is just to the northwest of Yeehaw Junction, a place I think most Floridians are familiar
yes.
with.
It's like the we're almost there, or like, oh no, we have another 3 hours to go.
Right.
Okay, so now that we've got a good idea about the two different species, what they look like, generally where they're found, we want to talk a little bit about skunk behavior, because if you're like probably most people in Florida, you have no idea what skunks are doing, when they're doing it, where they're doing it. So I thought it was really cool. I actually didn't know that skunks dig burrow. They make burrows and they have dens that they utilize year round, which I don't know. Did you know that, Shannon? Am I crazy?
I didn't, but knowing that they were in the weasel family previously, this does make a lot of sense. It's pretty much par for the course for that group of animals.
Yeah, so they will either make their own, or like a lot of other species that are burrowing animals, can utilize vacant burrows of other species like the gopher tortoise or armadillo. They can also utilize brush piles, wood piles, a generally like kind of grassy area, as well as fallen logs. So I mentioned dead trees being a key ingredient for one of mm-hmm. our skunk species. And so the fallen logs and tree cavities can also be utilized for den sites.
Just another species that really values dead wood in our natural areas and snags wherever they are found.
Yes. And I mentioned they're used year round. So that's for resting, hiding, birthing, rearing their young. And speaking of young, skunk babies are referred to as kits. Generally speaking, skunks, both species that we're talking about today, are solitary species, really only coming together to mate. the striped skunks will mate in late spring, and then they'll have anywhere from 6 to 8 kits. The eastern spotted skunk may produce 2 litters a year of 5 to 6 kits, and this can occur in the early summer and again in the fall.
Yeah, I mean, that 2-litter thing isn't extremely uncommon in Florida. We've talked about that before for other species because we have such a short winter that the spring, summer, and fall is just really, it's a great time to raise some babies.
Yeah, and if you put those two together, if you're in an area where there's striped skunks and eastern spotted skunks, it's like there's kits year-round, and they're adorable. I mean, we do say this pretty much in every species, but skunk newborns, they already resemble the adults in terms of their pattern color at birth. So they're just like literally a miniature version of mommy. And it's, yeah, look it up.
I mean, we like miniature versions of pretty much every animal. Yeah. So I think even if you don't love skunks, it'd be hard to say these aren't adorable.
Yes. Like most mammal species, the kits stay with their mother for several months, really only starting to leave the den between 6 and 8 weeks. And at that time, they're starting to learn to forage with their mother. And speaking of foraging, Shannon, you want to talk a little bit about their diet?
Sure. So skunks are omnivores, which means that their diet is based on what's available and what they can get their little paws on at different times of the year. But predominantly, we would expect skunks to be eating things like beetles and grasshoppers and other insects, other small mammals, amphibians, reptiles, birds, their eggs, even fruit, grasses, fungus, leaves, and other vegetation as well.
Yeah, and I thought it was pretty interesting. One of the papers I was reading actually talked about the kind of ecosystem service or benefits of having skunks in an area because of the diet that Shannon mentioned, because they do actually feed on a lot of our common garden pests, with insects making up a good portion of their diet. So I thought that was interesting.
And gardeners may not have seen them in the garden doing their wonderful garden pest elimination because they're primarily nocturnal, which might also be why I've never actually seen one in person. But, you know, there's always the future.
Yeah.
So now I think it's time that we transition to the elephant in the room, Lara. The one thing that everyone listening to this podcast is probably actually interested in about skunks. And that is their stinky, stinky little skunk stench.
Yeah. Stench is like, I feel like an understatement even. Okay, so we're kind of going to back up before we get to the actual stench and talk about kind of what it takes to get there, if you will. So when skunks encounter a threat, that's not the first thing that they do. It's not like you pose a threat to them and they're going to spray you. The first thing that they're going to do, most likely, is try and run away. If they're, you know, in a situation where that's not possible, they have some other moves, which are really cool. So they attempt to make themselves look like bigger and badder and scarier. For the striped skunks, they kind of arch their back, I guess, going back to like Shannon's cat analogy before.
Yeah.
So they arch their back, but then they also do this, they stomp their hind feet. It's hilarious. And yeah, just look up some videos. So they'll stomp their feet, arch their back. The eastern spotted skunk, though, have acrobatic skills. I don't know if that's even the right word, but they can whip out a handstand like they do it every day. And they just flip their back legs in the air with their tail as well. And it just makes them look giant and scary and also something worth searching online.
And also something you probably want to try to record on your smartphone, which I would not recommend because of what comes next.
So if those couple moves don't do the trick for whatever threat is in front of them, the last resort is resorting to spraying this pungent, that's a much better word, I feel like, oily musk that they release from a scent gland. They are pretty accurate with this move, and it's been documented that they can aim and effectively spray their targets up to 15 feet away, which is like insane. And the whole reason for this move is, right, pungent odor spray in your face. It gives the skunks an opportunity to then, while their predator is distracted by the putrid spray, to escape.
Yeah. So you see that little spotted skunk go up in his handstand. This is really not the time to get closer and try to get a video of how cute he is, because you need to be at least 15 feet away is what I'm hearing.
Yes. Just as we do with all wildlife, view from a respectful distance, especially with the skunks. Now, in addition to this 15-foot spray of accuracy or whatever you want to call it. The scent itself has been detected as far away as 1 mile. You know, once it's been sprayed, I'm sure it takes time, but can dissipate and be smelled for up to 1 mile away, which is insane. It probably explains why I was smelling it on the highway as a kid as I'm driving down I-95.
And speaking of roads, I feel like roads are really where skunks are seen most often. And unfortunately, it does tend to be for roadkill reasons. But we don't have a ton of data on where the striped skunk and the eastern spotted skunk are. We do know via iNaturalist that there are still people writing in observations of these two species. For the striped skunk between 2014 and 2024, there are only 66 verified observations statewide. And for the eastern spotted skunk from approximately the same time period, there's only 50 observations in iNaturalist of the spotted skunk. So if you see either species, definitely give it an observation on iNaturalist. Try to snap a picture from a safe musk-free zone and help us get more information on where these skunks are located. Because speaking of skunk conservation and research, very little is known about the spotted skunk in particular. It's estimated that their range has declined by more than 99% since the 1940s. And it's listed as a species of greatest conservation need. Now, this is not a legally defined term. This is a conservation research term, suggesting that because of the population decline, we should be doing more research and try to figure out what's causing that decline. Like many other species that we've talked about, what we think is happening is habitat loss, changes in agriculture, widespread use of pesticides, which can affect their prey, and also unknown diseases that we simply don't know about yet. Most of that data is about the spotted skunk. There's very little data on the striped skunk. Is that right, Lara?
Yeah, the striped skunk, because they just generally seem to be a little bit more abundant throughout the state. There's, you know, it's not till we're in extreme crisis mode with certain species that the research really kicks off. So unfortunately, with the dramatic declines, like you said, with the eastern spotted skunk, there's been a whole group, literally there's a whole website dedicated to researchers looking specifically at eastern spotted skunks and their populations.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that we have so little research about what we refer to as our common and native species. The species that we may see all the time, we know very little about a lot of their life cycle and everything that's happening there. But this is an opportunity where, you know, our listeners can get involved. So, Lara, why don't you kick us off with our first call to action?
Yeah, so we sadly talked about the roadkill situation, and that, you know, is the case for a lot of wildlife species. But the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission is still interested in collecting, I hate even saying the word, but carcasses of eastern spotted skunks for future genetic analysis because of the subspecies that we talked about before with the eastern spotted skunk. So we're not asking you to pick it up.
Ever.
But if you find one, a spotted skunk in particular, there's actually a website and it's pretty easy. Well, again, we'll include it in the show notes, but it's just skunks@myfwc.com and include the date that you observed it and the location so that somebody from FWC can go out and collect the specimen.
There's also a less formal way that you can report skunk sightings of either variety, and that would be on iNaturalist. You've heard us talk about iNaturalist before, but it's a wonderful citizen science way that you can get involved with all of our natural areas and the wild things that live here. So you can use the app or you can do it on the website, but report any sightings of striped or spotted skunks that you see, alive or dead, into iNaturalist and help build that conservation research up. Because universities and researchers use iNaturalist data more and more in their publications these days. And it would be great to get more skunk info in there.
Yeah, for sure. You all are extra sets of eyes that researchers, you know, can't be all over the state all at one time. So very, very helpful. And our last call to action is just simply, if you see a skunk, it's not a cause for alarm. Please do not call a wildlife trapper just because you see a skunk. We've emphasized that especially our eastern spotted skunk is having issues with their overall population. So anything we can do to avoid their populations declining would be great. Just let it be and it should be fine. And like we already said, please document it. Document that sighting on iNaturalist or through FWC.
Yeah. And if they happen to be in your yard and you're not super thrilled about it, you can always call your local extension office and we'll give you recommendations on how to make your yard a little less appealing to the little stinky skunks.
And with that, I think we will wrap it up. Again, as always, we will include lots of links in our show notes, and we will catch you all next time.
Thanks for listening to Naturally Florida, a podcast about Florida's natural areas and the wild things that live here. Stay updated on new episodes by subscribing on your favorite podcast platform. If you enjoyed today's episode, consider sharing it with a friend. Naturally Florida is produced by your hosts, Shannon Carnavalli
and Lara Milligan.
If you have questions or suggestions, submit them online at naturallyfloridapodcast.com. This podcast is brought to you by the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences Extension, an equal opportunity institution. Thank you for listening.